You're listening to Opus Talks, where you'll be in on conversations with insiders in the energy, chemicals, and environmental commodities markets. Guests share insights into the latest trends and innovations, industry challenges, and much more. Let's dive into the conversations that explore where the energy economy is headed, right here on Opus Talks.
Hello, my name is Anton Shenouda. I look after Opus services for the Middle East and Africa. Today, I'm joined by Kaushik Mitra, who heads our polyolefins insights and research for Europe, Middle East and Africa. So Kaushik, we've been hearing of a downturn from our clients. Can you describe the current dynamics of the polyolefins market and perhaps actually unpack the real story?
Thanks, Anton, for that introduction. And of course, thanks for having me. I'm Kaushik Mitra, based in Germany and at Chemical Market Analytics. As Anton mentioned, I'm covering research and analytics for polyolefins in the EMEA market, that is Europe, Middle East, and Africa. And thankfully, here in Dusseldorf, where I live, the weather is still fine and winter is still some days away. So we are not complaining. So yeah, just going back to your question, Anton. So there has been indeed an ongoing downturn in the polyolefins market, and various people are describing it as with different adjectives, but it is fair to say that the downturn currently really feels very, very grim and of course very challenging. Now the thing is that the polyolefins market is not really operating in a vacuum. We are at a time when macroeconomic headwinds are blowing very, very hard. As you know, inflation is very high still, despite all the monetary tightening that happened. Cost of living crisis is there. We all see in our day-to-day lives. Loss of household incomes, cost of interest rate, mortgage has really constrained our buying. And I think it has hit the consumer discretionary expenditure more than anything. And industries around the world are facing significant risks. And many industries are, talking about closing down or downsizing or, relocating. And in fact, major commodities, metal, non-metal, ferrous, non-ferrous, those commodities are also going through a big, big slump. So in a sense, that polyolefin market is really operating in a very, very challenging environment. However, what is unique perhaps to the polyolefin market is that it is not only demand destruction alone that is the issue here, but even as demand has really cratered, at the same time, we have seen that the supply has really skyrocketed. And this is because of huge expansion that happened primarily in China, but also in other places. Just to give you an example of this, it is like being in a lavish feast, with super low appetite. So even at a time when, things would have been normal and demand would have been normal, this definitely, this capacity addition definitely would have tanked the market. But now with the super low demand, things are becoming very, very overwhelming, I would say. There are factors such as supply chain bottlenecks, which are also, very, very prominent. Cost inflation has been a big, big, game changer that has hurt the profitability across the board, especially those in cost disadvantaged regions. But fundamentally, it is the unabated supply addition at a time of super low demand that has really worsened the market downturn. And the worrying thing is that things are going to possibly get much worse before it starts to get better. And this will definitely test the resilience of the industry. And what we reckon is that the industry will see more consolidation and some serious, closing of plants could be happening. We are already starting to hear news about some plants closing down in Europe and probably in other regions as well. There could be similar kind of moves. So yeah, we are going through indeed very, very challenging times and kind of unprecedented situation in the polyolefin industry.
Okay, thank you. So what key trends are you seeing in the market which are unique to this downturn and may have a longer term impact?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. So in a sense of being unique, through my career, I have seen, several such cycles, up cycle, down cycles, and each sort of downturn and upturn has its own stories and unique footprint in a way. But this one really feels quite different. And as I said, it is quite deep and also quite wide. So it covers quite a lot of players, let's say. And I would say nobody is really immune from this current downturn. But talking about uniqueness of this, you know, unique features for this downturn, I would say is that the unabated capacity build has been a key feature of this. In the past, when, you know, similar such cycles have happened, and the capacities come in batches, so there's always a bit of bunching that takes place with the capacity. So we have had, you know, a situation when there is a downturn and we would see that the capacity clock would immediately adjust. The timelines would be changed, capacities which will be proposed will be sort of cancelled, prospective investments will be cancelled or recalibrated, or even commercial production will be delayed by months, if not, you know, by year or two. Similar thing happens when the, you know, shale gas-led boom happened in the U.S. Similar thing happened when the Middle East capacities came between 2010 and 2014. So we had had several periods of delay. But this time around, what we observe is that the capacities are not only coming on schedule, but in fact, on each iteration, we are observing that the announcement of new capacities are adding to the list. And as I said at the beginning, that the linchpin, of course, is China, where capacities are coming at great speed and with remarkable efficiency. And any prospective investor, at least in China for now, is willing to ignore the current downturn. So they are basically ignoring and disregarding the current downturn, and they are bringing their assets with record speed and efficiency in terms of cost and timelines. On the demand side, what we observe is that the, you know, there has been a significant drawdown of inventories. And this is particularly interesting because we have also seen at the same time that the market has had, you know, supply chain bottlenecks. So even as supply chain bottlenecks became more and more chronic, you know, converters, processors, OEMs, brand owners, everybody has cut down on inventories. And they're operating really on razor-thin inventory levels. And this is unique because in times of uncertainty and demand volatility, and also at the time of supply chain bottlenecks, the market operators are willing to live through very, very low inventory level. That makes it potentially you know, risky for them to miss demand opportunity or demand upside opportunity, or in some cases, seasonal upsides on the market. But still, they are willing to do such a thing because obviously, first of all, the borrowing cost has gone up significantly because of higher interest rates. And secondly, the market volatility, demand uncertainty, all these things are putting their business models at risk. Their decision makings are becoming very, very fraught. And this is why they are, you know, everybody is taking very, very defensive positions in the market, and they're trying to, you know, safeguard against any market volatility or any potential downturn in the market. And the third significant factor is basically, you know, supply chain bottlenecks. Now, supply chain bottlenecks had been a fact of life because the overall supply chain logistics chain had been stretched, and companies who have cost advantage, they have been exporting to all parts of the world. But what has happened since the pandemic is basically we have seen that supply chain bottlenecks are becoming more and more chronic. And they are also becoming a big factor in terms of, you know, distorting market, dislocating markets, distorting prices. And especially this is happening in the east to west connection. So from Asia to Europe or Asia to North America, those freight routes are becoming very, very challenging proposition, I would say. The reason for this is basically trade asymmetry, tariffs. Geopolitics is also playing a big role. At the beginning of this year, we saw that in the Red Sea, there was a lot of attacks on the seabound vessels, and that disrupted the, you know, smooth movement of traffic. And what the, you know, transporter had to do was basically take a very, very long detour, or they had to delay their shipments and also cancel some of the shipments. So as a result of that, we saw that risk premium really went up significantly higher, and transit time went up more significantly. And then in the later part of this year, we saw that Chinese were exporting very, very aggressively. So availability of vessels and containers were very, very difficult, especially for shipment of, you know, resin and products. So the stakeholders definitely were impacted very, very in a major way. And this particularly affected regions like Middle East, because Middle East actually exports quite a significant volume of their production. More than 70% of their production is exported, as I said, to the far corners of the world. And as the supply chain bottlenecks became more and more chronic, they found it very, very challenging to maintain that export flow. So trade definitely suffered for a time. And as we expect that the supply chain bottlenecks are going to continue in the foreseeable future, this is something that the Middle Eastern operators will have to figure out and try to manage the risk in a more careful and, you know, well-crafted way. So these are the three factors. So basically, one is oversupply that has ignored the current downturn. On the demand side, we have seen significant amount of destocking. And on the supply chain side, we have seen regular supply chain bottlenecks emerging and distorting markets and, of course, prices.
All right. Well, thank you for that. So in terms of PEPP, from what I understand, it's a cyclical industry, right? So the current downturn should be followed by an upturn. So why is the market still so worried?
Yeah, as someone, as I've been saying, that I have seen various cycles through my long career. At the same time, I must say that, you know, in the past, we always believed that up cycle will be followed by down cycle, and then down cycle will be followed by the up cycle. So it is natural for anyone to believe that the current down cycle will be followed by an up cycle. In the past, we have seen that the up cycle would really erase the bad memories of the down cycle by rebounding demand. So pent-up demand will be very, very, very strong, and buyers will be very, very aggressively purchasing. There will be also stock building that will propel the market to higher levels, and, you know, very soon we'll be forgetting the bad old times. But in this case, what we feel is that the current downturn is going to be slightly different, in a sense that probably in terms of time frame, this is going to be longer. So possibly we have not seen the bottom of the cycle yet. As I said in the previous question, that the capacity build continues. So we are seeing that even for the next few years, the capacity builds continue unabated, especially in China and also in other parts of the world. And this is going to mean that those additions are going to be far in excess of the expected demand additions that are going to happen in the next few years. So demand obviously is going to recover because there is obviously pent-up demand which has built over the system. So consumers are waiting to buy once again. So we have been, as you know, we have been delaying our car purchases or consumer goods purchases or, you know, building purchases. So that those has been basically put off because of high interest rates. Now, as the monetary easing has started and interest rates have started to go down, consumers will once again be back in the whole system and they will start purchasing. So this will definitely propel the demand to a higher level. And then in addition to that, there will be restocking down the value chain because the current level of stocks, which is very low, is not really sustainable. And industry will have to rebuild the inventory. So both these factors will definitely boost the demand. But at the same time, the demand growth is unlikely to be at the level that we have seen in the past. So there are various structural factors which is changing. So people are obviously changing their buying pattern. Then there has been also structural changes in the sense that, you know, we are working more from home, let's say. So the requirement for office spaces has gone down. Consumers are also tending to be a bit more careful because of, you know, higher interest rates, economic downturn. So the same level of momentum in terms of buying may not be seen. At the same time, we have also seen efficiency gain and, of course, challenges from sustainability and circularity, which will also have a combined impact of having the demand grow at slightly lower level than that was, you know, evident in the past. So on one hand, there will be continued capacity addition, at least in the next few years. And at the same time, the demand growth will be, well, not very strong, but definitely more than modest. So in effect, what will happen is that the market will still be oversupplied. And from our estimation and our analytics, we suggest that the bottom of the cycle will be somewhere around 27-28 time frame. So till that time, so from current level of 2024 till next few years, we are likely to see operating rates will slide lower and hit a bottom around 27-28 in polyethylene and polypropylene. And this will mean that the margins and profitability experienced by the industry will test new lows, and which will make, you know, certain plants maybe around the world which are based on high cost obviously they will face severe challenges and probably some of the plants will be at risk. We have already seen that some units have already announced plant closure, permanent closure of plants in Europe. And this may soon be followed up with some announcement in Asia. In aggregate, those closures may not really shift the balance or alter the market, you know, dynamics in a big way. But this goes to show or amplify the case that the market is really very, very challenging and some operators are obviously finding the going very, very tough. I think companies need to be aware of these tectonic shifts that are taking place and position themselves for future. And I think I would say that it is here that we at CMA can play a very pivotal role in helping companies, you know, in terms of resetting their strategies so that they can survive the downturn and also emerge much stronger in future.
Wow. Okay, yeah, thank you very much for that. Okay, so let's take a deep dive into the Middle East for a bit. How are Middle East players coping with the downturn? And do you think they would emerge stronger or weaker from the downturn?
So Middle East is not totally insulated from the downturn because, as I said at the beginning, that there is no place to hide from the current downturn. And the Middle Eastern players have been impacted by the demand slowdown, the oversupply, the heightened competition that has impacted cost inflation, and of course, margin collapse has impacted everybody. Profitability is down, stocks are up, and many of the companies in the Middle East are also staring at a challenging environment, and many of them are considering, you know, operational efficiency, cost-cutting measures, and those are always on the table. But at the same time, I must say that the region itself, the Middle East region, has weathered the storm much better than the others. And this is primarily because of cost advantage that the region enjoys due to stranded raw material, which is available at a competitive price. And Middle Eastern operators have been able to leverage this cost advantage and deliver products to their customers all across the world. And despite facing severe headwinds in terms of supply chain bottlenecks, customer reluctance, heightened competition, they have been more successful than the others, I would say. So from that perspective, definitely it has been heartening to see that the Middle East operators fared better. But this is not uniform. So not everyone really fared better. There has been players who have been impacted more than the others because not everybody enjoys the advantage feedstock. There are some producers who are having heavier feedstocks in their feed slates. So obviously their cost position is not as advantaged as some of the other peers that they have. So obviously, as I said, the pain has been felt by some of the players more than the others. But overall, as a region, I think it has survived better than, let's say, some of the high-cost regions like in the Western Europe or the Northeast Asia region, where players are definitely finding the going very, very tough. And, if it makes sense, we have not really heard of anybody within the Middle East, framework talking about plant closure or downsizing or anything. So from that perspective, I would say Middle East operators were at a better place. There are, of course, other challenges, which is coming not only from a cost perspective or profitability perspective, But from a geopolitical tension perspective, we have seen in the region there has been challenges of heightened tension that disrupted market and also impacted, smooth flow of material. There has been financial crisis in a key market like Turkey, for example, which has also impacted, smooth recovery and, predictable demand profile from developing. And then, of course, the supply chain bottlenecks has impacted the, Middle Eastern market because obviously Middle East, as I said, exports more than 70% of their production all across the world. So because of supply chain bottlenecks, the trade routes became unpredictable and also volatile, and the cost became somewhat inflated. So obviously the arbitrage window shrunk to certain markets like Europe. So even though the market opportunities were there, they were not accessible in a profitable way. So these are some of the factors which obviously impacted on the negative side. But in the overall analysis, I would say if you take both the negative factors and the positive factors, I think the Middle East players actually survived the current downturn better than some of their peers in other parts of the world.
So It sounds to me like you're quite optimistic about the Middle East. Can you give us some insights on why?
Yeah, sure. I'm optimistic, because the region as a whole is optimistic, and which is, in fact, in stark contrast to the, let's say, gloom and darkness that is affecting plastics market in other parts of the world. So, for example, in Europe, where I live, there is talk of, downsizing, plant closures. So these are not obviously, good vibes for the market. While in the Middle East, people are talking about growth, they're talking about development, they're talking about investment. So this is obviously feeling very counterintuitive in a sense, but that is the reality that I think perhaps Middle East is the only region apart from China, which is talking about growth, development, investment, capacities. So this is something which is obviously, positive for the markets. And also, boost and uplift the spirits in a bigger sense. Because make no mistake that the industry really needs more capacities. So just to give you some context, in the next 25 years, we'll see addition of almost 100 million tons of demand between PE and PP globally. So that demand will have to be fed by new capacities because the current capacities will not be, able to meet those demands. So obviously, we need more investment, more capacities in future. They have to be obviously calibrated in such a way that they can avoid the current downturn. And I think the Middle Eastern operators are definitely focusing and sort of, factoring in the current downturn in their investment, calculations in a way. There are, of course, certain strategic compulsions, which is propelling the Middle Eastern operators to invest more. There is energy transition. There is also move by several of the countries in the GCC. To move away from, let's say, fuel-based or energy-based to more chemical-based or non-oil-based economies. So those are definitely driving more investments and more, capital into, chemical and especially PE and PP investments. So this is definitely going to, result in more capacities. And this is what we have been tracking throughout our, organization. And we see that prospective investors are actually lining up their investment plan for the next few years and next few decades, I would say. This will definitely improve the position of the Middle East in the overall, pecking order of capacities. Because if you recall, in the last 10 years or so, there has been very, very limited investment in the Middle East. So as a result of that, the overall capacity share of the region actually went down steadily as other regions, stepped up with capacity, especially North America, China. They have grabbed more market share. And this has resulted in the Middle Eastern operators actually withdrawing from certain markets, which they took time and, of course, resources to develop. And they have developed their capabilities. They have developed, sales footprint. They have developed customer businesses, business models. Everything was developed. But at the same time, because they were lacking in capacities and volumes, they had to withdraw from certain markets. But now with this addition of capacity, they will be able to re-access those markets and redevelop their customer relations in a big way. So obviously, this is feels quite good in a sense that obviously there is hope and there is also quite positivity about the future. And this is why I feel the focus or the momentum is shifting towards Middle East. And this is not only happening in the upstream side. So we are already hearing that on the downstream side, there is also quite a lot of development. There is, investments in conversion and processing capacities. There is also quite a lot of investments on the brand owner side. So OEMs are actually setting up bases within the Middle East because they feel there is cost advantage and there is also demand tailwind that will help them in future. So both the sides, I think, in a general way, we see development and more balanced growth, not only upstream, but also on the downstream side. So what we feel is that the region will be, regaining the center stage and become a, center for latest technology, process development, material sciences. And it will also attract world-class human capital. And of course, this will, help the region create a more equitable growth opportunity and foster more development for the region. So yeah, this is the reason why we are focusing on the region with great interest, and we have obviously a very, very strong presence in the region, but we are planning to develop and build on that in the next few years.
All right. Well, Kaushik, thank you very much for these useful insights. That's definitely food for thought. Just before we end, I wanted to quickly mention that GPCA is coming up this year. This year, it's going to be the 18th year of the annual forum. And this year, it's going to be in Oman from December 2nd to the 5th. If you're attending, if you're planning to attend, we'd love for you to stop by our booth, come and chat with us, and explore these latest market insights and connect with the team in person. We're going to have the full suite of our experts there. And we really look forward to seeing you. And thank you for tuning into our podcast.
We hope you've enjoyed today's insider conversation on Opus Talks. Join us next time for a deep dive into another industry insider's world. You can find more Opus Talks episodes at opusnet.com/podcasts or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.